whatever we humans do are is not perfect. Yeah, it's perfectible. Yeah, but it's not perfect.
Welcome to the Circuit Magazine, the number one source of information on protection matters, the industry-leading magazine for all security professionals who want to stay ahead of the game.
EP modernization with the ASIS incoming chair, Kevin Palacios. Today, Elijah Shaw and myself are delighted to be speaking with him at a time of great innovation in the industry and also great change. Obviously, standards always a hot button topic, but Elijah, what are you looking forward to about today's session?
I think this one will be very interesting. I don't know Kevin personally, but ASIS has been around for, you know, forever. And so having someone like him on the program, being able to get his perspective on these issues. And to be honest, some of the issues are fairly controversial. So it'll be good to get his outlook and kind of and see what our listeners think.
And I guess, you know, that's a good point because ASIS International, it's very much corporate security focused. How much of a focus is that as an EP career pathway?
As far as if there's an appeal to private EP transitioning over from corporate security as a career, I definitely think so. You know, I think the wonderful thing about our industry as a whole is that there's so many paths and avenues and lanes that you can choose from. And being able to switch or transition, you know, from one lane to the other isn't a bad thing. It just speaks to the robust nature of what we do. You know, if you get the experience and you have the passion and the skill set, you should be able to do whatever you want and make a career out of it.
Well, fantastic. Let's get in at the ground level, you know, the incoming chair of ASIS EP committee. Let's talk to Kevin Palacios and look at EP modernization.
And now, let's meet one of the contributors to the Circuit magazine.
EP modernization with the incoming chairman of the EP community for ASIS, Kevin Palacios. It's a great pleasure to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm very well, excited to be here and ready to share a lot in this podcast.
And there's a lot to share because, of course, you have many hats. You're the regional chair for IFPO. You're the founder of Helps LATAM. And this new you know, posting as the incoming chairman for the EP community in ASIS, lots to take on, right? Lots to look at in the community. I guess we have three quickfire questions that we like to ask each time. And, you know, what is the problem we're trying to solve? And where does your passion come from? And what about the completely uninitiated? I'm going to do it slightly differently because it's a slightly different topic. But what are you hoping to solve with your new posting as the EP community chair at ASIS?
Well, I'll say my mission will be to promote excellence and leadership in the executive protection industry itself. And I see this as a very global call. ASIS is an international organization and in my case, I will be the first chairman from the EPC that is non-US based or non-American or North American. So I see my mission as promoting this excellence and leadership in a global scale.
Fantastic. And of course, you yourself are global. Well, compared to me, you're global. Of course, you know, for you, you're local. But it's great to have someone from Ecuador, at least based in Ecuador, on the podcast. Where does your passion for all things EP come from?
Well, I've been working in the industry for 25 years, and I've gone through all the ranks from a static guard operator at events all the way through a close protection officer, being also an intel analyst at some point. And then, of course, I run missions throughout my region. I work all over Latin America, not only in Ecuador. I work in Colombia, in Peru, in Chile, Argentina. So by being exposed to some of these best practices that exist out there, I got very much in love with the organization, with ASAS. I find it a source for wisdom and a source for networking. It's incomparable, really, to any other security organization. I'll say that over the years, I got to learn one or two things, but I feel that the EP specific area of the industry needs to improve a lot on a creation of a body of knowledge, creation of standards, and also to have a recognition, a real recognition on what we really do. Perhaps moving away from these biased images of Hollywood has brought into the minds of what a executive protection professional is. And again, bringing it on a more professional way in general, I'll say.
Fantastic. And that professionalization, that blends into standardization, which is, of course, a topic that people like to discuss, shall we say. But if we take a step back, there aren't really any uninitiated protectors in protection because, they're already focused on the subject. But what if I ask for a bit of clarity around the role of ASAS and EP? Because obviously there are many different, I suppose, routes to EP leadership. There's many initiatives for standardization and training. But maybe if you could give us a bit of background on ASAS, what are they working on?
So, ASAS International is, I would say, the largest organization globally in all things security. Yeah? So, they have a presence, or we have a presence, really, all over the world with chapters and with several initiatives supporting, again, many different organizations such as ISO, International Standardization Organization, ANSI, and so on. Within ASAS, which of course is large, has a rich history, and so on, we have several subject matter expert communities. And in my case, I am the chair of one of them, which is the Executive Protection Community. We are right now about 1,700 people, really, in the community. It's quite a large community. It's very diverse. We have lots of women. We have lots of people from all over the world, and also on different backgrounds and different levels of involvement with EP, from managers to all the way down to operators. And therefore, I'll say that ASAS has taken a path of leading, again, all things security since 1955. And it has actually gone through the process of creating standards, becoming a certification body, also, of course, running very successful standards. I guess everyone in the industry knows what a CPP, what a PSP, what a PCI is. And in this particular moment, I'll say one of our efforts will be to use this wealth of knowledge and the experience that ASAS has, and kind of channel it to the executive protection specialty. So ASAS is very well advanced in the process of creating a ISO standard, which is a international standard in this case. I really love the idea that it actually went all the way to being a international thing. It's a global initiative. Again, and also as AZS has the resources, the experience, I believe that a process will come to a right end. Yeah, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint race. Yeah, I'm also a 17024 ISO auditor myself, so I know exactly what the process is like. I know that it is a time-consuming, resource-consuming, and again, it's a marathon. It's not about getting there. It's about sustaining the standard. So, again, that's one thing that ASAS is doing right now, and we as a community are working hard on. Then also as a more kind of temporal thing, the next couple of years, my personal mission again is to bring ASAS into the EP scene worldwide. So we want to be present at every single EP-centric event. We want to make good relations with every single EP organization that is out there. Again, it's more of a uniting or adding, yeah, and hoping to get the executive protection industry together. So that will be basically what we are focusing on, or myself, I'm going to focus on the next couple of years as a chair of the EPC.
Fantastic. Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that speaks to an increasingly globalized workforce. Over COVID, lots of the community have got to know each other online, and they've met up in person. And it seems really about time. But now I do want to get onto the standardization question, and I do want to get onto standards and that hot topic. But I think what a good opportunity, since you're based in Ecuador, to sort of say, well, do you think that there's room for more collaboration, especially in the LATAM region? Because I mean, I don't know the LATAM region as well as maybe I could do. What's the EP scene like there? I mean, we know the EP summit in Mexico City. We know that and that's fantastic. But what's the community like down there? And do people like cooperating and collaborating like maybe we do over here?
Very much so. By the way, the executive protection community has a large presence in Latin America, all the way from Argentina, where we have is very active. We do a lot of meetings, and we even create newsletters, share a lot of best practices. Chile, of course, Peru, Ecuador. Well, I'm here. Colombia is very, very knowledgeable about operational EP. Brazil, well, Brazil is a whole continent by itself. And of course, yeah, you go to Central America and yes, Mexico. Mexico is more visible, I'll say, because it's closer to the US. It's a large country as well, has a lot to offer. But also in the Latin, and I prefer to call it Latin, not just LATAM, because we have a really interesting support from some professionals in Spain, in Portugal, Andorra, for example. So yeah, we believe we have a lot to share. As a region, we have had our big share of situations, tasking situations, events, and of course, insecurity. So the protection of these critical impact individuals in our region, well, we have a history on that, and we are ready to share, and we're ready to again come into the scene and also give something into this world a body of knowledge, just like any other region, by the way, because I also acknowledge that there's a lot that has been done in Europe, in the UK, and Middle East. Yeah, the experience of the Israeli security forces and even Asia, which has a lot to offer, a lot to share. So yeah, I believe everyone in the EP industry is somewhat on the same side. Yeah, we should all be kind of supporting each other, helping each other. Networking is a must in this industry. It's just absolutely a nonsense a step that needs to be taken. And while we support, while we help, while we come to I guess understanding within the industry, we will be stronger and we will be able to complete our mission, which is the protection of these individuals that create a critical impact. It's very important. Again, my vision is that it is very important to acknowledge that this is not a US-centric initiative. This is more of a global initiative. I'll do my best during these couple of years to get closer to, again, professionals all over the world.
And I'm glad you said that because, even the CPP exam in the past, and this has changed, but in the past, people commented that some of the phraseology, some of the scenarios were US centric in that exam, and I think they've addressed it, or at least they are addressing it. So it's good to have that. I remember Ivan Ivanovich, who has come on the podcast before, mentioned that Mexico, he thought, was a laboratory that we could look into the world of EP in a much clearer way. So perhaps that transposes to Ecuador. I don't know. I'd be interested. Obviously, I want to get onto standardization and that hot topic. I'm not going to go into diamond formation standardization just yet, but is it possible to operate in different Latin countries, or is it just, you hand off your principal at the border to someone else? That question has a relevance in the standardization question insofar as, what is equivocacy, and how will an ISO standard help that? But I wonder, just for the dynamics, if I'm an operator thinking, right, I'm operating in Ecuador, suddenly someone's going to Peru. Can I go to Peru? Or is it just very different wherever I go?
Well, every country has its own regulations, laws. So when we work on the EP industry, we have to face that big and crucial part of our work. Yeah, we need to understand the differences in regulations, laws, and of course, yeah, the customs in every single country. So the standard will be then that if you come from the UK and if you want to work in or if you are protecting a principal, an executive in Argentina, Chile, Peru, Ecuador, you can actually visit the country for sure. Unless you have a working permit, you wouldn't be officially working really in these countries. And by the way, unless you go through a lengthy, difficult process of being licensed and also getting a permit to, for example, carry a firearm, you wouldn't be able to do so. So, for the ease of practicality, I'll say, what normally happens is that EP agents that come from Europe, from North America, they go into the country as part of the entourage of the principal, the executive, and they rely on local professionals like myself, with our licenses, with our personnel, with of course our resources, local resources, to actually do the operation. Yeah. Now, a big important and crucial part of executive protection will be a risk analysis and, of course, a proper advanced work. So, the ones that know more about our risks in our countries, well, will be us. Doesn't matter if you're an analyst sitting on a computer somewhere else. Well, there's just a limit of what you can get out of OSINT and so on. Yeah. So basically having our boots on the ground is basically necessary for doing this risk analysis. And of course, due diligence, you need to know who you're dealing with locally. And of course, doing a proper advance, which takes a few days and knowledge on the ground, well, that has to have a big local component.
And so, is that why the standard is so important? Because, especially if you're doing something really fast, you see, aha, they have this new ISO standard. I know what they're all about.
Yeah, the way we manage EP detail should be somewhat standardized. Requirements for executive protection professionals should be also standardized, as well as, I'll say, general terms on operations. Well, best practices should also be standardized. Always there is a local component that cannot be standardized, yeah, like laws, regulations, as well as, of course, the local flavor, which is totally different, and of course it goes according to the different countries. Even in the US, I've done very little work as an EP professional in the US, in the United States. Normally, when I go there, I follow the same procedure. I just go as part of the crew or the entourage of the executive. But even in the United States, they have like different regulations and different ways of doing things in different states. Yeah. So when you cross a state line, your license will in most cases is not good in a different state. It will be illegal for some people to actually continue on working as an EP professional while they're driving and they cross the state line, yeah, or carrying firearms is a whole different story as well. So what we standardize will not be laws, will be more procedures, a language. We need to have a common language. We need to understand each other. Yeah. Even though I'm speaking your language now, I'm speaking English, well, of course, but we're talking about the technical part of executive protection that needs to be standardized.
And I can fully see that. And again, there's that other question: who's asking for this standard? And I remember we had James Cameron on, and I put it to James and the BEPP. I said, "Well, who's asking for it? Is our customers asking for it? Are clients asking for it? Are principals asking for it? Are other operators asking for it?" So I guess we do want to explore that. But one really kind of positive thing about your initiative that just sprung to my mind, and maybe this is intentional: an EP operator who gets into the ASIS system can see themselves as part of a wider whole. And instead of the usual or quote unquote usual career path of be an operator, be a team leader, maybe set up your own firm, maybe become a consultant, I can see that that would help them find mentors into the world of corporate security. Because
Yes.
there are lots of EP professionals who don't necessarily know enough about ASAs, because they're, oh, that's about, a building manager. That's about corporate security. So is that intentional to try and marry these two sectors together?
Yeah, ASAS is all things security, and you have communities with different specialties, and they're, I believe, 32 or 36 communities right now. And yeah, so first of all, if you're looking to do or to follow a career path, I'll say in ASAS we have some very interesting mentorship programs that can help you on that. So doesn't matter if you are brand new to the industry, if you are a young professional, you can actually join the executive protection community, and you will be among peers, and we are all about supporting, helping, and of course advising if needed. Yeah. Then of course, It is important to acknowledge that ASAS is more of a management level and directors level organization. So that's what I call, well, the all boys type of circle, yeah. And you get kind of exposed to that as well. That's an important part of ASAS. So you can get to actually understand what corporate security is really about, what a role of a security manager is really about. And then, of course, a big important part of what you get out of ASAS is also networking and opportunities. Yeah. We're talking about, again, the largest member-based security organization in the world. So you will be therefore able to reach people pretty much in every single country. Is sort of a organization where you can rely on people, because we all have to follow a certain code of ethics and so on. And then there is also a basic body of knowledge that most certified professionals follow. So it has these advantages, yeah. ASAS is not just a certification body. ASAS is not just a board that creates standards and so on. It's a lot more than that, yeah. And by all means, again, my plan is to bring ASAS more into the eyes of EP professionals all over the world, and vice versa, also to attract and to create for as much as possible agreements with every single organization. I try personally to be in good terms with every single professional. Yeah, we're again on the same side. The criminals are on the other side.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really lovely things about the community, is that maybe people disagree on standards, right? You know, maybe they do, but at least they know they need to work together. And at least in many geographies, there's enough work that they don't come into, you know, too fierce a competition with each other. Of course, yeah, there's areas of fierce competition in every area. But let's come on to it then. When we talk standards, the thing that sets LinkedIn alight, and probably Facebook, you know, is when somebody says, oh, it should be done this way, it should be done this way, and then someone pipes up with the overarching question, who's asking for these standards? I guess what's your take on that? Because you know, what's driving it? Obviously, it's very good to see the industry standardized, and it's very good to see licensing, but who's asking for an ISO standard?
Many interested parties are asking for a standardization. I'll say to begin with, ourselves, yeah, professionals. Like yes, in my case, again, I've been 25 years in this profession. It took me a long while to understand the I'll say standard way of doing EP business. From a corporate point of view, you know, North American, European, and so on. So it will have saved me, well, lots and lots of time and money and so on, or by leaping through that learning curve and just going to, okay, this is what needs to be done. That's one thing. Ourselves, yeah. I say as individuals, then also as professionals, because you need to be able to trust your partners, you need to be able to trust your vendors, and standardization is a way of also setting I'll say a way of due diligence really among the industry. So this is very important. Now, seeing it from a company or from a corporate way of doing, by following a standard, you show that you are doing your duty of care properly, that you are fulfilling all of your, I guess, due diligence in a corporate way. So that has also legal ramifications in case of a situation where you have lawyers and courts and so on involved, knowing that or letting them know that you did follow a standard which is approved by peers, approved by the industry, and even recognized by international bodies. Well, it's great. I would say that standards are like having a big, strong tree that you just keep it very close, and in case the big storm comes, well, you can always embrace it, and you let them know that you are there. So it keeps you rooted and keeps you safe. Then, on the other hand, I guess also regulators, in some ways, even though they will never agree on having a single law, yeah, the way you do things in the UK is totally different as the way government runs things in Ecuador and Latin America, as North America. But regulators will always be in favor of having at least some basic, let's say, common grounds. Yeah. So having these common grounds also eases, I guess, the updating of laws, which is always very important. Hopefully, John Lennon will be one only world, and we'll all live in peace and so on in the future. But then I guess this is also something important from down that sense, yeah. Academia is always something that intrigues me because I'm a university professor myself, and there is absolutely very little. I was about to say none, but almost none research done on executive protection itself. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, that's a good point, and we've had Dr. Treston Wheat on, and we've had my friend Dr. Samantha Newbury from University of Salford, and they're working on the IPSB journal. They're trying to give it a much more academic flair. There will be other initiatives, of course, but one thing that brought up was, of as you said, the lack of secondary literature, but the lack of academic rigor. They did flag that they're working on making academia apply to operations, because otherwise it's just, well, it's very thoughtful, but it can be navel gazing in that you're going, I was a barbarian, now I'm in the boardroom. So there's that element to it. But going the other way around, I wonder if the standardization will give us the tools to conduct research, or will we always be hampered by the fact that, well, we're looking after ultra high net worth individuals, so they don't really want. They don't really want all their details and bits and bobs out there. I guess that's more a poke the bear question, but what do you think?
It's very important to differentiate between a body of knowledge, so that's what you get when you write a book, yeah, or when you write a guideline or whatever, from a standard. So a standard is more kind of a set of minimums, yeah. What is the minimum that needs to be done? And part of the standard will also be agreeing on a common language, yeah. Terms, definitions, which are very important. Yeah, as a neuro-linguistic professional myself, I also say that words are extremely important for people. And knowledge for the human race works on a constructive way. So it's not an end having a standard. I'll say it's kind of a stepping stone. Once we have passed that step, and once we have a standard, then we can go beyond and create many other things. Yeah. Plus, of course, whatever we humans do is not perfect. Yeah. It's perfectible. Yeah. But it's not perfect. So even though a standard is a best effort run by people in a given point of time to set what is right, it always needs to be improved, change, And again, that is the reason why I strongly believe that a organization with the history, with the resources like ASAS was created more than, well, in 1955, so it's almost, well, what, 70 years old now or something like that. And it has proven that it can withstand the test of time. Yeah. Because again, it's not a sprint, it is a marathon.
And how is it, if I can ask, and if it's, I don't know, how is it different to the proposed ANSI standard? Is it going after the same types of standardization, or is it different?
I am very familiar with what the BEPP is doing. I am very familiar with the content of it. Now, the BEPP is basically working more on a very operational level. I'll say as far as I know until now, they kind of work very hard on setting up a body of knowledge, yeah, which is great, just a lot of theory. And yeah, that is going to be at some point turned into a standard, proper standard. And then it has to be, well, it has to go through public review, and it's a big process. Yeah. Now, that is going to be more, I'll say, US-centric, because that is an ANSI, that's a North American standard. While ASAS chose to go more international right from the beginning. So we are working with ISO. So I'll say that will be a big difference. ASAS standard is a lot more aligned to the Plan, Do, Check, Act cycle. Again, so it's more kind of compatible with every single other standard that is out there. ISO standards, I mean, like ISO 18788 or 9001, 45001, you name it. Yeah. So by having an international ISO standard, we would be able to, I guess, integrate into what corporations are doing in their own business, and we will be able to merge, or I'll say, bring the EP part of a business into the other industries business in a nicer term, I guess. Yeah. So having it under ISO, I believe is the right way thinking in a long term and in a global way. It has its merit, by the way. BEPP is I'm a big supporter of what they're doing. I really believe they can create something which is good and will add to the industry. But of course, it's a different path, the one that is taken. Yeah.
And on that sort of note of unifying and collaborating and reaching out, even if it's just for my own benefit, if everyone else in the audience knows about all these extra associations that we might want to reach out to, then please answer us on a postcard. But if I look around, there are organizations large and small. I saw even our friends doing the Texas EP mixer, right? Just for Texas. And there was one in Alberta with a different organization as well. And I remember back 2016, the first IPSB conference was sort of an attempt to blend existing events from Nine Lives, from EPI, from ESI, and so on. What organization names should we be looking at in the Latin world? Is there like the Peruvian EP weekly mixer? I don't know. What are these names of people we should be reaching out to in terms of organizations?
Well, I'll say more than well, there we have a number of local, I'll say, country-based organizations. Most of them are small or middle size. Some of them do need a lot of work on their own, again, standardization. Some of them are just working based on the old, I'll say, methods or ways of seeing EP more as a police or extension of military operations. EP is more again private, by the way. So it's they're not really on the right path. There is a lot of that has been done regarding regulations. Again, Colombia is a very interesting example of it. Well, because it was it went through a whole different set of really asking situations with the guerrilla and so on, and it made the law in Colombia being very detailed. Yeah, regarding what you can do, what you cannot do, is almost asphyxiating in some senses, because it gives you basically every single detail of what you need to do. Again, Argentina is an interesting place to see. They are doing a lot regarding operational type of training, which is great, is good, but it's not really what you do work, what you do mostly in your work, which is more of a tactical nature. I'm more of a big proponent of risk analysis, again, and due diligence, and doing your pre-work, yeah, which is the most important part. Mexico is very varied. There are a number of small organizations. They have a large event, which is great. The EP event, which is run by actually right now this year, they're going to have a collaboration with the IPSB. So sort of IPSB in Mexico. That's when going to happen over there. So yeah, there are a number of I'll say country-specific organizations. I wouldn't like to kind of name any specific one, because I'm talking about 22 different countries. So if I
Yeah,
miss anyone,
you'll miss them
yeah.
out, and they'll say, "Why didn't you mention me?"
Exactly. But anyway, and just as a matter of fact, if anyone that is listening to this podcast wants to perhaps suggest a collaboration between the ASAS EPC and any organization, again, not only in Latin America, but worldwide, I'm all ears. I'll be more than happy to, again, try to get as close as one on the industry, really, yeah.
Well, perfect. Yeah, that's absolutely what our listeners should do. Because yes, we do have many listeners that are specifically from North America and Europe. Yet we know when we see the stats, we have Latin listeners, African listeners, Asian listeners, and of course Australasia as well. So absolutely, people should reach out. I'll be interested to see on the Asian side. Just a few sessions ago, we had a focus on China and some of the challenges of being an EP operative in China, and some of the things you're definitely not allowed to do. But hey, that has to be built into the community too. That has to be built into the standard. So I'd really be interested in that. I'm very much looking forward to seeing what the EP Summit does this year, and if not before next January, I'm looking forward to welcoming you, Kevin, in person to the next London event in January. I think we're going to have to find an opportunity before then, but I think it will be good.
I'll be honored to be there, by the way. Yeah.
Fantastic. And it's going to be the 30th of January, because we're always the week after Davos, and because the way the year is structured, it means that we're on the 30th of January 2025. No, never too late to get in your diary. But good. Well, Kevin, thank you very much. And I appreciate this is a blend of topics. We are very interested to see what your work with the ISO standard brings, what your work with the community within ASAS brings. But it was also lovely to hear your thoughts on the region, the Latin region. I call it LATAM, but you gave me some food for thought calling it the Latin region, because, hadn't appreciated that. What's next for you, Kevin? Where can we next find you?
Well, you can find me actually. I used to. Well, I am very active on LinkedIn, So you can find me as Coach Seguridad. That's my name over there. Well, you can put a link here, so it will be easier for anyone to reach me there. I am very active, of course, on championing for security officers. That's operational level security officers through the International Foundation for Protection Officers. I'm also doing a lot of, I guess, voluntary work on helping, I'll say, these forgotten soldiers, which are the ones that are doing the boots on the ground, really work night shifts and so on. Yes, I am going to be very active as part of the EPC. By the way, on the February 15th, that will be, I guess, next week, we're going to have a get together for the EP community. By the way, this meeting is not exclusive. I want this to be a very, I'll say, open invitation to anyone in the industry that may want to join us. We're going to discuss about these high-profile attacks that happen worldwide. We want to give it a kind of a global overview of what happened in Europe, what happened in Asia, Latin America, North America regarding political figures. So we're going to have a panel discussion on the 15th. You're welcome, by the way, and please share it in your social networks. We welcome everyone to join. And after that, well, we have a few plans for the year, including these quarterly events. We're going to have some events in Spanish language as well. And we want to be present as part of the EPC on every single EP specific event around the world. So I'm just open for any invitation. If you're running an event, I'll try to, well, do my best to be in all of them.
Fantastic. Well, that's a challenge. Yes, you're going to get all the invitations now, but definitely from me and from us. Well, Kevin, thank you very much for coming on. Thanks for telling us about your new mission. I hope this spurs some meaningful debate, and it's been a pleasure dropping in on Ecuador and the Latin region as well. So, Kevin, thank you very much. This has been another fantastic edition of the Circuit Magazine podcast. Well, thank you very much, Kevin, and so pleased that we caught you as you move into that new position, and I'm sure some fantastic leadership we will see. I'm back with Elijah Shaw. Elijah, what did you make of today's session? Pretty far-reaching, pretty broad-ranging, but what are your thoughts?
So as I mentioned, I didn't know Kevin, but it was great to kind of get a sense of his take on all of these different issues, and I think our listeners will find benefit from it. You know, that's the amazing thing about the circuit. We interview people from all over the world, literally, and from different backgrounds, and we're able to kind of take that and present that and package that in a way that just literally at the tip of your finger, you can get some additional insight on our industry.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Kevin. What about you, Elijah? What's next for you?
All right. So, what's next for me? Well, this has been a busy one. In fact, listeners might have noticed I haven't been you haven't been able to hear my wonderful voice on the podcast as much of late because I've been very active with an operation that's been going on for the last several months. That's actually winding down to the end, so I'm seeing light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm kind of plotting out what's happening next for the spring and the summer. For me, that's going to include trying to get another training course out, and then there's a couple conferences I'm going to speak at. I'll probably hold on those announcements for right now, but hopefully by next episode, I'll be able to kind of give some specific dates, times, and locations.
Well, when you know, let me know. I'm looking forward to it. And I know our community really appreciates your courses. Well, moving forward for For me, this coming next week, I will be at ASAS Europe in Vienna. If you're around, please do say hello. I know that there's going to be a good IPSB showing. There'll be an IPSB mixer. Thomas Gephardt has sent something out. I know ASIS UK is also having a mixer, as is WIS, Women in Security. Brittany Galley, I think, is organising something. There's just something for everyone. So if you are going, please do say hello. There are a few WhatsApp groups people can join and so on. And, of course, do let us know in the BBA Connect app or the NABA Connect app, because that keeps us all together as we move around. As always, we're looking for more contributors to the magazine. I know that some of our latest podcast guests have written articles, which is great news. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I want to have more sessions with Elijah. That's what I want. So I'm very much looking forward to next few editions. This has been another fantastic edition of the Circuit Magazine podcast.
You have been listening to the Circuit Magazine podcast. Be sure to subscribe and be sure to not miss an episode.